Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Pamela Brewer welcoming you to this edition of Mind Talk and to this edition of Men's Monday here on Mind Talk. Every Monday, you and I have the opportunity to meet another man who has agreed to share his life, his goals, just kind of his walk in the world. And today is no different. I'm very pleased to introduce to you Howard Weston, who comes to Mind Talk with 25 years experience as a boxing industry professional. He was a Golden Gloves champion. I'll let him tell you a little bit more about that part of his history. And today his focus is a great deal on health and aging and being well. Howard Weston, welcome to Mind Talk.
Hi, Pamela. I'm glad to be on. And thank you for having me on your show.
Well, let me start with where you were born and some of your early influences.
Oh, well, I was born in New York City a while back.
Just a couple of years ago, right?
Yeah, a couple of years ago.
Okay.
And the bottom line is I when I was born back then, you know, a lot of things were happening. Was going through a lot of problems that are not, they say it's hard today, but it's not hard today like it was back in the 50s and the 60s and 70s. And coming through that era, I'm very fortunate to have a great dad and a mother. But, you know, they had separated. And at the same time, growing up in Harlem, you know, you go through those transitions. But one thing that I found that I enjoyed was family. And that was the key point. And when I'm talking about all family, you know, brother, you know, cousins, uncles, and all that, because my it was so funny, Pamela, that I had my cousin living, like, we lived in the same building in Harlem, and so one cousin, two or three cousins lived on one. Well, they had two floors. Yeah, they had four apartments on, no, three apartments on one floor.
Okay.
I used to live on 135th Street and Lenox Avenue. And I used to go across the hall. You know, we used to go from one apartment to the other across the hall from each other. So basically, you know, our family was that close and everything. And I just remember back in those days, you know, the partying. All my family always had a party. But I remember the people when people were short on money for their rent that month. People used to have rent parties. You know, I don't think you would know anything about those things as young as you are right now.
Absolutely right. Never heard of them. So for those folks listening who never heard of a rent party, what's a rent party?
A rent party is when somebody's short on rent, everybody will have a party, and you'll come to that person's apartment, and you'll buy food, and you'll pay to go in. It's almost like, you know, going to a disco. And you'll buy drinks and everything, and we'll use that money to pay for that person's rent for that month, so they won't get thrown out.
Okay.
Yeah, that was the thing that was in the neighborhood, and people really believed in helping each other back then, and it was always a thing that we cared about. So I remember those times of how that gathering was always that togetherness. We stuck together as African American people, and it was very important. And so at the same time, it was just always respecting your elders. And I think that's the reason why I'm so high on this thing today about aging, because I'm seeing so much disrespect for the aging people today, where the young people just think that they're going to stay young for the rest of their lives, and not respecting the elders and thinking that, you know, just forget about us, but they, you know, they're going to stay young for the rest of their lives, so we should be demolished, but they should be here forever. But it's not going to work like that, because they don't understand the knowledge of the older people telling them how to survive through life.
It's
going to get them to live older. But if they take an approach that they already got the answer, and they think they're going to be here for life being young, somebody's telling them the wrong message.
Indeed, if they're lucky, they'll become elders.
There you go. And so I really want to tell, and I want to tell the older, you know, people that are getting older, that life is not over because you hit, you know, 50, 60, 70 years old, 80 years old. You're still living. And love the life you're living and try to do the best for it. You know, the thing that we got to do, we got to take care of ourselves. That's where the health thing comes in. We got to take more care of ourselves as we grow, as we get older, to make it to those ages that we got to make it to. But at the same time, us doing the stupid things that we're doing in this society is just ridiculous. And I say that because it's not back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. They didn't know too much about the drug thing. We knew drugs were bad, but we didn't know as much as we did about cocaine. Because I remember one time they said cocaine was like a party thing. You know what I mean? That's supposed to be a rich boy, rich man's kind of drug, okay? Mm-hmm. Marijuana was supposed to be a thing that, you know, it was no big thing. And liquor was, you know, was something that was, you know, in that time wasn't good for you because the United States, you know, government was stopping liquor from coming across the board. They didn't even want to sell liquor back at one time, back in the 20s and all that, okay? But my point is that they passed the law for liquor, but all these other things that they're passing, you know, marijuana and the drugs that these kids, I'm just so surprised people taking drugs today, especially ODing or heroin and doing cocaine, when we know that these things are bad and it doesn't do no good for you later on anyway. So I don't understand the logic of the people taking these things as they're getting older. So I'm saying this, the young people are just stupid if they're doing this now when we know it's not good for you at all.
And, you know, there's a large portion of the aging society that are taking drugs, and it may start out as prescription drugs, but that's a real issue, too, that a lot of people, certainly family members, aren't paying attention to because they're not thinking about, you know, grandma or grandpa getting high on whatever. But you know what? I want to back up a bit because I understand that you became interested in the sport of boxing and you heard me introduce you as a Golden Gloves champion. You started being interested in boxing at the age of 9. What? How? Why? What did you do? What was all
well,
of that about?
What happened was, well, you know, you had to be, you know, when you was growing up back in those days, you had to be tough. at a young age, because you know when you we started school at 5, right? I mean, we had bully people in that at that time, okay? So we were always, you know, we had to know how to fight because every corner you went to, you was always gonna get picked on if you didn't know how to fight. So what happened was is that I just got tired. You know, I had cousins and all that, and I had my uncles. And they used to always like rough me up and everything because they wanted to make me tough. So, but I didn't know how to really use my hand. But my father was a trainer, and I used to see him on TV. You know, back in those days they had the Friday night fights, and I used to see my daddy on TV working in corners with fighters. And so my daddy comes, my mother takes me up to go see my father. He was at the gym. And so I go see him, right? And at that time, it was 1960. I will always remember the day, 1961. And it was Emil Griffin was trying on his championship belt that he had just won back from Benny Kid Perret. And they were taking pictures on him. And I was watching, you know, from the chair I was sitting in. And I just saw all these people just gather around and all these lights and the cameras and everything. And I told my dad, I said, I want to do that. And he said, get out of here, boy. You ain't going to be doing that like that. You're going to go to school. You know, I said, no, I won't be a boxer. I won't be a boxer. He said, boy, please. So every time I used to see my daddy, when mommy and daddy used to meet and everything, my father used to work at the Jack Frost Sugar Company here in Long Island. And we used to go, you know, used to go there on payday. Let's say that. And so My dad said, I want to be a dad. I want to be a boxer, Dad. I want to be a boxer. He said, boy, please, don't stop. You know, and he kept pushing me off. And then one day, you know, I came up there and said, I want to be a boxer, Dad. I want to box. And then he finally said, okay, bring your sneakers up here. You know, come up to the gym. Now, you got to understand, the gym was in Manhattan. I used to live in Jamaica, Queens, okay? So that means I had to take the train into Manhattan to go to the gym. But I was doing some crazy things in school, which means that I was kind of a bad boy in school. And so to keep me out of trouble, and not get into no trouble after school, this was a way of making me go to from Queens after school and go to the gym, and my father watch over me. But I had to do my homework before I can train.
Okay.
And they had to check my homework. And my manager, who became a manager, Gil Clancy, he was a former school teacher. And he was the manager of Emil Griffin, who became welterweight champion of the world, the person I told you about that I saw pulling the belt. So I went to Griffin's dressing room. Every time I came to the gym, I went to Griffin's dressing room, and I had to do my homework. And as I finished my homework, Gil would look at it, see if I did everything. And if I did everything, then I could start training. And so that's what got me to get into the gym and start working out. And then my father started training me. But they paid no mind to me. I mean, it was just something to get me off the street so I wouldn't get in trouble in Jamaica. I used to, like I said, live in South Jamaica, Queens.
Okay.
So I wouldn't be in trouble. And that was the whole, you know, idea. But my idea was I wanted to be a boxer. Okay.
You were very clear.
At 9 years old, I kept on boxing, and then all of a sudden I got into they call it smokers. I started doing a couple of smoker fights, and I started winning. And then after a while, they just let me do, because what it did, it kept me off the streets, and that was the key point.
What was a smoker fight?
Smoker fight is something like it's not regulated by organization. It was like guys, like another gym would just have a show, and they'll put fighters from each gym, that young kids, 9 years old, 12 years old, in boxing matches. It's almost like being in the amateurs. But we're getting these fights, fighting different guys from different gyms. And that's what we call the smokers, because it's not regulated by any commissioner or organization.
I see. So that was where you got your start, and you kept going.
And I kept going, yeah. And I started getting better and better and better. But I got my butt beat. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it didn't come easy. I mean, I had to pay my dues all the way. It wasn't like, here, we're going to give you this. We're going to take care of little Harold. We're going to watch him. No. I had to earn mines, and that was the whole thing. I earned mines, and that was the key point of me being successful in boxing, and especially when I went on to win the Golden Glove. I went into the Golden Glove at 16 the first year, and I went to the quarterfinals, lost in the quarterfinals against a guy named Shuby Street. Shuby might be in jail. He was in jail the last time. He got a lot of time. He was robbing banks, so Shuby, I don't know, he might not be. He might be still in jail, but just in case, he might be listening to this show.
Okay.
It was a guy named Shuby Street. And Shuby Street won the glove that year. And that was in 1969, okay? 1970, we had come back. I go to the open class. That means the more experienced, you go into the more experienced golden glove. So when I go into open class, same weight class, the first fighter I fight in that tournament is Shuby Street. And he had just won the glove the following year, right? I beat his butt my first fight in the open class. And then I went on from there and beat everybody, and I won the open class that year, 1970.
And that was what happened? I mean, was that the real beginning of your career, would you say? How did people respond to your winning?
Well, let me just say this. That's the beginning of seeing that you got potential.
Okay.
And seeing that what back in those days, that was see what bright fighter is coming out of the boxing world. Who's going to dominate the sport in New York City? What fighter is the most classy? Who can really make it from the amateurs into the pros? So that is the stage that it sets for you. And so so winning the open class was great. Now let me tell you this. A lot of guys do win the Golden Glove, but they don't become very successful pros when they get into the pro rank. So what happened was, when I won the Golden Glove, what was great about it too, Pamela, is that Sugar Ray Robinson won that, the Golden Glove, 47 pounds. Emil Griffin won the 47 pound. So the 47 pound, Golden Glove, winning that was a big honor for anybody that won it at 47 pounds, because of Ray Robinson making that an honor to be 147 pounds. So when I won that, it was a great honor. Especially back in those days, everybody would put their eyes on guys that were boxers back then. Because being a boxer, you know, they knew what you had to go through. And being on that top tilt of good amateur fighting, it was a very important factor because everybody gets to know you or hear about you in the New York area. Because the word of mouth, back then we didn't have no computers and all that electronic things going on. Word of mouth of you, who you beating the amateurs and how you won the Golden Gloves, is a very important thing. And they know that when you're fighting in those amateur programs, that you're fighting tough guys. And so you got guys from every neighborhood that's in the Golden Glove. You know, it's coming from Brooklyn, Bronx, Staten Island, everywhere. There's just tough guys. And then you're getting guys coming out of jail, too, that's fighting, too. So that means that you can be 16, 17 years old, but you're fighting guys that's 30 years old in the amateurs.
Huh.
And when I won the gloves, I was seven, when I won the gloves in 1970, I was only 17 years old.
So anybody could, any age? I mean, there's no restrictions in terms of age or life circumstance or anything? You could just go in and fight?
Yeah, well, there is an age stop. Well, I mean, you can get in at 16, but they used to not have no age, but now they make, at 35, you can't be in the Golden Gloves.
Okay.
You can't be in the Golden Gloves.
But then there was not a restriction.
No, it wasn't a restriction back then, no.
What do you think of the restriction now? Does it make sense to you?
No, because, you know, right now, I mean, it's just ridiculous to the point that, you know, why they made no restriction, because the guys were so good back then. I mean, even guys was older was real good. And today now, I mean, you know, it's all these restrictions on things. I mean, if you're still capable of doing it, I think you should be able to do, you know, be involved in the job.
Okay.
Because I think that other people will learn from you, and that will enhance the whole program that you're doing to other kids and other young men or women to make the program keep going. You know, you learn from each other. That's how we learn. That's why we're here today, because we learn from each other as we grew up. And from our forefathers and everything. But today it's like, cut off, okay, you're 40, quit him, he's too old, get him out.
Yeah.
But how are you guys learning anything? You ain't like, this is the person that invented. And I tell these young kids, I said, the blueprint has been put down, okay? You guys are learning from the blueprint. Don't think that you're learning anything. You ain't learning nothing. This has already been invented. This has already been discovered. This has already been here, okay? You have did nothing.
So I hear that you are extremely passionate about this.
Oh, yeah, because I'm getting tired of the young. I'm reading in the papers the other day, where they are firing people because they're older.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I'm saying, are you kidding me?
And no,
you're
they're
fine
not.
Because they're older. You better hold on to that person so you can get that experience, so you guys can get to this age. Because if you don't understand how to get to this age, you ain't gonna get there.
Well, that's
true. And who's gonna tell you? The older people. It's serious.
I hear that. You're absolutely right. There is a huge, I don't know if it's changing or not, but there's certainly a huge amount of interest in 21 and under, because by the time you're getting up in the 30s, for many folks, you're old. Don't be in your 50s or 60s, because then you just might as well pick up the shovel. So
yeah, you're a dinosaur.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm thinking that perhaps it's getting a little bit better, that we are a bit more expansive, but not enough.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, they don't understand. And see, the computer thing has really uproared everything, because now the young people think they don't need us no more. All they gotta do is go on a computer. But where the computer's getting their information is from people that are from the older age, okay? And a lot of that stuff in the computer or on the internet is only things that people have told them. It's not that everything that you read on there is true.
Well, that's true.
Everything that you read on there has came from the right person, okay? That is so far-fetched. I mean, I read some things about me that I said, I didn't do that.
Howard Weston, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I actually have a confession to make. So, folks, don't go away. We will be right back. Howard, before we actually started talking today, I let you know that I knew not next to nothing about boxing, but absolutely nothing about boxing. So with that as a backdrop, as I was researching your background for our conversation today, I saw that you were the first African-American matchmaker for Madison Square Garden, and I couldn't figure out why a black guy was matching up couples in the garden. I got very confused about that. So for those who are perhaps as limited as I, when it comes to understanding boxing, you weren't actually matching up couples for a love fest. What were you doing as a matchmaker for Madison Square Garden?
Well, what I was doing, Pamela, I was putting on boxing shows, putting fighters together, and putting shows together for the boxing match. And at that time, that position, it was a very strong position here in New York, or pretty much around the world. And boxing was a big thing at one time. So Madison Square Garden was the mecca, as you always would hear that word, the mecca of boxing. That was the blueprint. And so me being in that position made me run the boxing world. And because what it did is that fighters and that could wanted fights and get build their records up and everything, they had to come to me to get on the show to build their record up and get fights and everything. So if you came to Madison Square Garden, you know, coming through at that time, you know, tell you the truth, the boxing thing stopped at that time when I was involved with that. But my point is that coming through the boxing world, you had to come through Madison Square Garden if you really wanted to really get to be have a big name and get that prestige out. And boxing is the mecca of the world at that time, back, you know, going back to the 20s and, you know, the 18s. And you had to come to New York to be established.
Gotcha.
And so for me to be the man that runs to get you on that show, to fight on the show at Madison Square Garden, that was a big thrill. So me being the man that ran things and had it where I was the one that was approving the matches and on the show was a big thing. So that's the reason why when I did, it was a big moment for me saying the first black to be to run Madison Square Garden boxing.
So
it was almost like being a Pope or being president of the United States.
Wow. So it sounds like, you know, hidden within that comment is a sense that there weren't a lot of blacks who were involved in approving matches for the Garden, that perhaps they were mostly white or certainly not black. Is that the case?
Well, like we said before, you know, we're talking about an era that a lot of blacks didn't do a lot of things anyway, okay?
Okay.
Back in those days from the 1920s all the way up into the 1960s, all the way to the 1970s, okay? So just think about it. We're talking about when boxing started in 1980, you know, all whites ran everything all the way until the 1960s. Now, when I was brought into Madison Square Garden, I was then running Madison Square Garden at that time in the late 1980, I was brought in. Okay? So you're talking about that whole 100 years, a hundred years of Madison Square Garden, that there was no black person running anything in boxing.
So from 1880 to 1980, it was all white.
It was all white. And you know, you had Don King was doing his thing on the outside, but you had all whites that were running the whole thing of boxing.
You know, a lot of people have the sense, and there are all kinds of movies and television programs in which boxing is depicted as this crime-ridden entity where there's very little that happens that isn't somehow influenced by some criminal element. Is that true, or is that a myth?
Well, I mean, I think that every industry has some type of criminal activity in it at one time or another.
Okay.
Boxing is no more from it than anything else. Baseball had it. Everything had it. But what has happened is that the United States government got involved in 1960, and they were getting ready to stop boxing completely. Just back in that era, they were getting ready to stop it completely in the United States.
Why?
But because there was a lot of death in boxing.
Okay.
And at the same time, a lot of gangsters in boxing. And so the government had a hearing on this, the United States government on Capitol Hill, and they were going to vote to stop to demolish boxing. And they had a big hearing, and it was passed that they were going to let boxing happen, you know, because of after they get. But they said they're going to police it better than what they did, and that's where a lot of government got involved and started putting their offices in certain, you know, areas around the United States where every state had to have a boxing commission.
Okay.
To rule the boxing. So that's where boxing was saved in the 60s. Was because of the death is one, and because of the racketeering of a gangster was in the boxing world.
Would you say that boxing is a reasonable career path for folks today, either in the ring or behind the scenes?
It's an opportunity.
Okay.
And at the same time, it gives a young man who doesn't have another way of making it in the world that wants to be something, if he has the talent to learn the sport and get a good trainer and good people behind him and becomes a good athlete, because that's what it's all about. You can make a whole lot of money. I mean, you know, these kids today is making crazy dollars in the boxing world, where we didn't make nowhere near the money that they're making, and we had to fight each other and fight killers on top of killers. And so my point is that with today's talent, because we don't have the great trainers that we had back in the other day, these kids are definitely limited to the knowledge of the sport, of learning it, but the money is much, much greater than it was back in my day. Much, much greater. I mean, you can be a millionaire in this sport within no time if you make the right moves and fight for the right title. It's unbelievable the money that they're getting for the fights that they're having because of boxing itself, because the name was so great with great fighters and great people involved. That's the reason why people still look at it. But it doesn't have that charisma that it did before, because the talent is not as great as it was back in the day when I was fighting and before my time. It was just unbelievably a sport that got everybody's eyes and got everybody's attention in the world. And that was what boxing is all about. Because even in the amateurs, when the Olympic comes, everybody glued their eyes to two sports, track and boxing. Those are like the real major sports in the Olympics for everybody. But, you know, now today, boxing is not the real, you know, mecca of the world like it was back in the days that the day I was in it and the day and after, before I got into it.
You at one point became an independent promoter and developer of young men. Tell us the path that you took to become an independent promoter and some of the folks you worked with?
Well, you know, what I did, Pamela, what I wanted to do, and I knew that this was a big problem in boxing, there was always that discrimination of trying to block a lot of guys, especially African-American fighters, of making it in the game, Spanish and African-American fighters. And what I wanted to do was open up the door to everybody. And that's the reason why I went to, when I got to Madison Square Garden, that's what I did. I didn't, you know, before that, you know, if your cousin, your uncle or somebody, your best friend, those are the only people who was able to get into the Garden and get their fighters on the show.
I see.
I made it when I got to Madison Square Garden. I said, you know what? I'm going to open this door to everybody. So I said, anybody can come up to my office and talk to me if they got the right fighter. And my statement was always, I don't care if your fighter is gray, blue, black, green, or brown. If he can fight, you can talk to me. If you can't fight, don't come and talk to me, because I know my fighters and I know what I'm looking at. So that was my statements to all the trainers and managers out there. And so it worked out for me, because then I started looking at some good fighters that was really had the potential. So I went in that time that I was at Madison Square Garden, I was able to make 6 world champions out of him. One kid that you probably heard of was named Hector Camacho. And I made him, you know, junior lightweight champion. And then I made another kid named Juan Laporte, a kid named Mark Madow, who came out of jail, didn't have no experience in the amateurs, but I saw something in him, and I got him with some people, and he became a champion of the world. I made a kid named, who had no potential at all, looked like he was going nowhere, named Iron Barkley. And he became middleweight champion of the world. So I made these guys, and then when I made all these guys champion, you know, the Garden was sold to the Dolan brothers, and the Dolan brothers didn't like my approach, and so they put me and put somebody else in there. But before I left, and this is what I said to people when I left, I said, when I leave here, boxing is finished in New York.
Were you right?
Boxing is gone. You don't see nothing at the Garden no more.
Okay. Okay. You knew what you were talking about.
You don't see nothing at the Garden no more. You don't see the talent that they had when I left there. Because at one time it was the mecca of talent and great fighters coming there. Like I said, I made 6 world champions out of that establishment at that time at Madison Square Garden. And these kids, we had big draws, and people would come and see you. Now, when I left there, they put their own guy in there, and they went right back to the old way that they normally do boxing. And what happened? Boxing went down the drain. Because I know it doesn't work. You know what I'm saying? You just can't be that old boy situation. You had to look at talent. You had to bring new kids in, new faces. The world was changing. But these guys wanted to do their same old way of, you know, hey, Johnny, what you got, bro? Give me a couple of fights. We do it. Mac, you bring me your guy. And that's who only that old boy thing was always in there. And I eliminate that for that period of time that I was at the Garden. And I was at the Garden from 1980 to 1986.
So it seems to me that it is not surprising that in 2015 you were inducted into the Hall of Boxing Fame, the New York State Hall of Boxing.
Yeah, that was New York State, yeah, Ring 8, the organization that runs that. They finally opened up their eyes and saw that I did something in the boxing world. That is another thing that you go through in life, and you look at other guys. You know how you sit there, Pamela, and you see some other people getting awards and getting things. You say, well, wait a minute.
Yes.
Wasn't I before them? Didn't I accomplish that before them? How did they get in there before I got in there? And I did more than they did.
Indeed.
And so I you know, I my father always said, son, don't worry about it. They know what you did. The problem is you just do what you got to do, because they can't deny you forever. They're going to have to call you, because there's no way in the world they can ever, ever in life in anything that you do and accomplish. As long as you want to up and up and you did it, that's what counts. And that's what I always lived by in my life. That's because I didn't even worry about it. And when they finally called my name and gave me the watch, I said, yeah, thank you, I appreciate it. Because I thought it was very insulting to me to sit with certain people that was voted in years before me. But I was the one, like I'm going to say, I was a former boxer, Golden Glove champion, fought for the world championship twice, okay? I accomplished a lot here in New York, brought boxing back on its feet. And at the same time, when I became the first black matchmaker, I brought boxing was going into a drought. I brought it back to life in New York City. We're making those six world champions out of Hector Camacho and the other young men that I made champions and everything, Adam Asquith. So I brought boxing back to his hee-haw days in that 1980 to 1986, okay? And then when they took me out and put somebody else in there, when that period of time it went down and he didn't make nothing out of the Garden, and then when the Dolans came in, they just got rid of the Garden. They got rid of the boxing altogether.
So
it worked out.
To award you in 2015, so many years later,
right?
A mixed blessing for you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it happened. I mean, like I said, they couldn't dodge me for so much. I mean, because you just think about it, right, Cam? First African American matchmaker at Madison Square Garden. Madison Square Garden has been up for 100 years. What does that tell you?
Right, you're right. You are absolutely right.
How did you skip his name? He's a former fighter, a Golden Glove champion, fought for the world champion, was the best welterweight in the words of, and this is what I'm saying, you can put his name in the lot with Emil Griffin, Sugar Ray Robinson, Vince Sherman, great welterweights in the New York area, Marv Breland. All these are supposed to be great welterweights, and my name is in that group, and you don't even put him in the Hall of Fame yet?
A mixed blessing indeed. I hear you. I hear you.
Hey, wait a minute. And let me just put it this way, too. And he's a good citizen?
On top of all of that?
Going through that era? He's never been on drugs, you're telling me? He's never been locked up? And y'all didn't put him into Hall of Fame? Now you tell me the story.
I think you've already told us.
That's what come out there as a big laugh, okay?
I got to tell you, clearly you've been through a great deal, and I also note that you have had programming relationships with the best of the best.
Yes.
ESPN, CBS, BET, GQ, Sports Illustrated. You've been doing this for a long time and been doing it, clearly doing it well, or you wouldn't have had... Well, you know, I was going to say you've clearly been doing it well or you wouldn't have had the opportunities that you had, but the fact is, as you're saying, many people do things very well, and sometimes based on other people's perception of how they look or who they are, they don't have the opportunities.
Yeah, and you know, and Pamela, what I have done too, and you know, and I don't talk about or brag, but I have met the greatest men and women that walk the planet of Earth. That's something it doesn't bother me. I have been around Sugar Ray Robinson. I have been around Muhammad Ali. I have been around Sammy Davis Jr. I have seen Frank Sinatra. I have seen all the great ones that made this world happen and walk. And I've been around Jim Brown, men that crossed the line that made us do the things we're doing today because of what their stands were. I met these men personally, talk to them. I ain't got to prove nothing to nobody. Well, I'm very happy about me or where I've been and how I did it. I don't know. I met the great Lola Falana. See, nobody even knows about her, how what she went through to get where she's at in life.
It sounds like you got a book swirling around in there somewhere.
You know? So, you know, but my thing is that I laugh at this joke about how they praise so many of these young people and people in general of things that they really ain't really do, or did, or said. And let me just put this way. I protected this world. I got drafted and went to the military. Okay?
All right. You were in the Army and with the 1st Cavalry.
That's right. New York, 1st Cavalry Unit and down in Texas.
Howard Weston, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'd like to talk about what you're doing now, and you have your own radio show. I'd like to hear about that.
Okay.
Folks, we will be right back, so don't you go away. We'll be back in a minute. Howard Weston, today you're doing many things today. One of them is your own radio show. Tell us about that.
Yes, I have a radio show called Man to Man, and it's on WHCR 90.3 FM here in New York. And what the show is about is what I live by, is men talking to men, which we don't have a lot of that being done today. And the reason why I thought about the show, I thought about the young men today that are growing up and not really having that impact of a man talking to them like I did. I was very blessed, Pamela, in my life. I'm going to say that. I had a great father, okay? Great, great father. He surrounded me with great men from every walk of life, from the high to the low, street guys to the guys of Capitol Hill, President of the United States, whatever. But he surrounded me with people that gave me the knowledge and the ambition. I mean, I would try to be cute at some time, and they smacked me upside the head and got me straight again. But my point is, they taught me. And that's how come I go and do the things that I do and say the things that I'm saying about people in general, because those people are the one that guided me to where I'm able to stand on my own 2 feet and handle the things that I handle in this world today. And what I'm trying to do at the same time, why I got a show called Man to Man, is to help these young men to talk to me and get some advice, because they need advice. They cannot do this by themselves. There's no man or woman can do anything in this world by themselves. They always going to need somebody to help them and give them advice. Even if you've got the right answer, you know what you want to do? You want to get feedback and get that feel from that person to see if you are doing the right thing. So basically what I'm saying is that these men in general, and that's the reason why my show is called Man to Man, because I like to talk to these young men and give them ideas and talk to other successful men and tell them what they have done, how they got where they are in life, to help the young men, because it's needed. Nobody, like I'm saying, nobody can do this by themselves unless they get it from the person that really accomplished what they have accomplished in their world and learn the things to teach other people what they can learn in the world.
So, again, the name of your program is Man, the number 2, Man. Man to
right.
Man. And the station is?
Is WHCR 90.3 FM.
And can it be picked up online?
Yes, it can be. And it's in Harlem, and it's on let me get my bearings here.
You're supposed to have that at your fingertips.
Yeah, that that is my fault.
Okay.
And that is a sad thing that I done did too.
Okay.
We were talking about so many other things, but But you know, like I said, the show is definitely on Man, you know, Man Talk, and it's about every man. I have a lot of celebrities and people with what they have accomplished, because everybody got to the top a different way.
That's very true.
And getting there is a way to, you know, achieve, you know, see how you achieved it, and it can work for you, or it can work for me. And you know what's so funny about it, Pamela? Everything that everybody does don't work for you. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's true, too. let me ask you this. In today's world, you know, there's so much that we're hearing about in terms of the injuries, the physical injuries, the traumatic brain injuries that can occur in the various sports fields. Do you have any particular concern about sports and injuries? Do you have any particular advice to those who want to pursue a sports career?
You know what's so funny, Pamela, is this in life. A lot of things, especially in sports and any kind of activity, is combat. I mean, it's combat sports. You're going to get injury. Being a police officer, going to the military. So my thing is that knowing that these things can happen, and will probably happen to a lot of people. I think that as men and women, is that the only thing you can do with yourself as you battle these events that you go in is try to really be as careful as you can. But you, and this is, I'm being very honest about this thing. Learn from the people that has already been there. You know what I'm saying to you?
Absolutely.
Because when I went to Vietnam, and this is how I survived. Okay, I'm 64 years old. Okay, I'm not ashamed of my age. I'm very proud of my age, because I know what I went through to get to this age. But when I went to the military, and you know what the old guys told me when I was getting ready to go to the military, when I was getting drafted, they said, get yourself in touch with one of the guys that's been in there for a long time. Learn everything that he has learned while he's in there, so you can avoid not getting hurt. Because you know what can happen to you in the military? You can die.
Right.
Okay, and you know what they're going to do? They're going to send a little note home and say, sorry to say, but your son died here in the military. He was a great man, and he tried, and he did all the things, and we're proud of him. That's it. Okay?
Gotcha.
And so what I'm saying is, here in boxing and anything that you do in any sport, be careful, but get with a person that's been there, that know what they were doing, so they can give you some advice to avoid some of it. You're not going to get away from everything. You're going to get hurt in any kind of combat sport that you do. You're going to feel injury in any combat sport. You can be a ballerina, and you know what? You're going to hurt your toes.
That's true.
Okay? You're going to get a strain in your ankle and everything else, all right? So my point is that if that's going to happen, why you want to be a ballerina? Because it's something that you love to do. Unfortunately, it has an injury situation, and can you deal with it? That's what we find out if you want to do it, if you don't want to do it.
Gotcha.
As it comes, everybody can do everything.
Well,
and that's what makes us where we are today, and makes all kinds of sports that we all are in to make us want to make that step or not make that step. And you say, okay, is she good at what she can do? Is she a great ballerina? Can she stand on her toes for an hour? Can she keep doing little twirls and jumping and everything and land on her toes? You know, and I know, that's the most difficult sport in the world. You're going to break your toe. Every ballerina knows that.
Right.
They're going to have operations. They know that. But why do they do it?
They love it. It's a passion.
Yeah, and same thing with boxing.
Okay. Let me ask you this. You talked earlier about really being concerned with respect to health and aging. For those listening who might be somewhere near your age range and beyond, mm-hmm. what do you want them to think about in terms of health?
I think that what they need to do, and this is something that we was taught back then, and they have taken and they had the nerve to take it out of some school, recreation, exercising at noon, okay? And this is what our forefathers said. We need to exercise. If you don't move, if you don't move those bones, you don't move those muscles and keep those things toned as you age and as you're growing up, you're going to fall apart. Why do you think certain people are limped over? Because they didn't use their backs no more, okay? Why people are going through all these, their hands are getting locked up and all, because they're not using them as much. See, you got to use these things on your body to keep it mobile and keep it going. And if you don't do it, you're going to start freezing it up, and you're going to start hurting yourself, and it's prone to break easier. Because you haven't did anything with it for 10 years, 20 years, 30. You've just been going through the motion. And that's the stupid part about on us as people. And so basically, my father lived until he was 84. My other father, who I call Gil Clancy, was my manager. He lived until 86, okay? These men did their little exercise. My father used to always walk everywhere he go and did his little push-ups and workout. Okay, they live at. So I said to myself, I said, how did they do it? And they told me, and they showed me. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing. That's the reason why I can talk this talk and walk this walk. Because of what they have shown me. The blueprint has already been laid out. I just took that blueprint and just said, okay, I'm going to do it this way. And you know what? No smoking. No mess with no drugs. Okay? Drinking, you know, in a social time, and the only thing I drink is red wine or some champagne. That's all I do. I don't have no hard liquor, nothing like that. You can still have fun and enjoy it in a sociable way, but you ain't got to have fun every day. And one thing that I stay out of, I do not deal with drugs. This drug thing, you, and I can say this, back in the 50s, there was no such thing keeping taking pills and all that stuff, you know, as much as these people are taking today. A drugstore, people from just buying all these certain kind of pills from everywhere and just to get themselves numb. It doesn't make sense. We have weak-minded people that believe in everything they read or hear.
You sound upset.
And that's what older people have taught me, and that's the reason why I can say that if you find an older person, you better take care of that person and talk to that person, because believe me, they got the remedy how they got there. You better learn whatever you can get out of them. Learn it. Because it's a beautiful thing getting old. This is a unique group getting old.
That's
unique.
Yeah, it's true.
Okay? Nobody's better than this group. This is the greatest group of all. And I'm telling these young kids, they can talk that talk. Yeah, you young, but you know what? I know everything you're going to do before you even do it. And you know what's so funny about them? My parents used to always tell me that, right? My uncle, they used to always, I say, how the hell they know what I'm going to do before I do it, right? But they did. You know why? Because they did it themselves.
It's quite annoying as a kid.
Yeah, it was. It was annoying back then, but now I understand how they knew before I even did it, because it was already laid out. All I'm doing is following the script. They already read the script, and then they added something on to the script. So as I'm saying, is that it's just a thing of life. Like I keep telling these young people, the blueprint has already been printed. You guys ain't coming up with nothing that has not already been laid out, okay? There is no more greatness in this society. Stop it. You have no more greatness. You can make the basketball come down, the basketball court, make it shorter. You can have them shoot whatever. You might have the guy, don't touch him when you play touching basketball. You can have a football player run up and down. You can do all you can change. But the greatness of greatness is never no more in this world.
That's a pretty big statement.
I done seen it all.
That's a pretty big statement.
It is, and I'm going to say why.
Okay.
Because you can't get as great. Because let me tell you why. When the guys were hitting home runs back in Babe Ruth days, they were hitting it with a wooden bat, okay? Today, they're hitting with aluminum bats. That's not greatness, okay? And the bats are a little bit shorter than what they are today.
You know you're saying some things that are getting some people a little upset.
I don't care.
Okay.
If the two. Let me just say this: the truth hurts, Pamela.
Okay.
The truth hurts.
Okay.
The truth hurts, and let me just say, these guys in boxing who talk about I'm world champion. Hey, they only gone 12 rounds. We went 15.
Okay.
Okay. And all these champions running around, there was only one champion. Now you got 20 champions in one weight class. It doesn't make sense. Don't praise yourself when you're a champion. You ain't did nothing.
I gotcha. But like I said, you have annoyed a whole bunch of people, but it's clear that that is not going to keep you awake at night.
No. No, because when the truth is out there, it's out there. And that's the bottom line to it all. And I know that they know that. What they don't want, that they don't want a person like me to express it. Because they know what I'm laying out to everybody. It's the truth.
Well, I am actually delighted that you have been willing and able to take the time today to express it here on Mind Talk.
Yeah. Oh, but and by the way, let me get this one thing out to you. In football, Jim Brown ran 1,000 yards in less than 10 games. Now we got 16 games in football season. Now it's a big thing for a player to run 1,000 yards in 16 games. You tell me who's the greatest football player ever walked.
I'm not going to fight with you. I learned my lesson about, you know, 5 minutes into our conversation. I am not going to argue with you.
And so, you know, but that's what gets me about, you know, this generation in general. I have nothing wrong, have no problem with the young. I'm just saying, respect the elders. Stop the nonsense. Stop beating up on the elders. Stop robbing the elders. They are your bridge to where you can move on to get to them, okay? You better be grateful that they're talking to you. Because if they don't talk to you, you're not going to get to where they are. Because that group that we're talking about, elders, from 50s on up, is a great group to be involved with. Because you know why? You know a lot, and you enjoy life more better. You say, I did it. But you don't do the right thing by talking to them and understanding how they got there, and you don't know how to get there, you're going to be like me throwing you into the woods in Africa and say, okay, now find your way home.
Gotcha. Howard Weston, who hosts Man to Man, a weekly radio program that comes out of Harlem, New York. It is available online, so just take a look for Howard Weston and Man to Man. Howard, thank you for spending.
I hope I didn't take up all your time, but they're talking so much.
No, not at all. I mean, the whole purpose of the program is for you to have an opportunity to say what's on your heart and what your experiences are. And you have done that with passion, and I thank you for that.
Oh, and by the way, I am starting a new program too, a sparring match for fundraisers with a fighter named Vito Antifermo. He's a former world middleweight champion. And we're going around, it's about aging and it's about health. And I'm going around saying life is not over because you're in your 60s. Vito is 60, he's younger than me. Vito is 62, I'm 64. And he's in great shape, and I'm in great shape. And so we're just going to go around, and we're going to have a little sparring match of 3 rounds to show that you still can keep going on in life, no matter how old you are. You just got to take care of your body and be in good shape.
Excellent. Thank you again very much, Howard Weston. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And folks, I thank you for joining me today on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is available to you daily as an educational public service. It is not intended to replace any work that you may choose to do with a licensed medical, mental health, or other professional. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications and is available on demand by going to mindtalk.org. That's mindtalk.org, or you can download the Mind Talk app for free from the iTunes store. If you would like to be in touch with me directly, if you'd like to be in touch with me directly, the email address is Pamela, P-A-M-E-L-A, @mindtalk.org. mindtalk.org. And folks, I'd like for you to remember always, if it's unacceptable, then that is precisely what it is. Unacceptable. You take care.